The Spectator's podcast now have a newsletter. Sign up for free at spectator.co.uk/podcast-highlights to get the Spectator's podcast highlights in your inbox every Monday.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So today the Labour Party has decided to settle its anti-Semitism claims out of court. That is only with the whistleblowers who talked to the Panorama documentary about what it was like in the party. Katie, can you just catch listeners up on what happened all those months ago?
Yes, so this goes back to when Jeremy Corbyn was leader, Seamus Milne was his director of communications. There was a Panorama BBC programme in July 2019, and the title was, Is Labour Anti-Semitic? It had a number of former party officials appear in it, alleging that senior figures close to the leadership at the time had interfered in the process of dealing with complaints of anti-Semitism. The response from the Labour leadership and the Labour Party machine at the time was to suggest that, you know, this was a politically motivated, various other comments, and what it led to was going to a legal case. And today what's happened is under a new leader and lots of different people in senior positions, the Labour Party has agreed to pay substantial damages to those who were accused of, you know, having political intent, and also issued an unreserved apology in the High Court. Now, this is controversial because I think that if you look at those who were there at the time when the initial response from Labour came, I don't think that Jeremy Corbyn and those around him think that the Labour Party should have done this. But clearly, and we've heard this a lot in, during the leadership contest, that Keir Starmer wants to take a much tougher stance on anti-Semitism. Now, this is also a legal case, but I think this is another sign of the fact that he is doing that with actions, but it's one which I think has created ill will amongst the Corbynite faction.
Now, James, the Corbynite faction today has come out pretty vocally to say that they don't think they should have been settled and that they would have won in court, which is what Len McCluskey said. Do you think that Keir Starmer is pushing the Corbynite faction a bit too far? We were talking about before when Rebecca Long-Bailey got sacked that Keir Starmer should be thinking about pleasing that side of the party more.
No, so Keir Starmer's ratings. So historically, as a general rule, the Labour brand was stronger than the brand of its leader. The Corbyn years have reversed that because that process hurt the Labour brand. And Keir Starmer is now polling better than the Labour Party itself. And I think you saw from PMQs today when Boris Johnson was going to try to attack Keir Starmer for the fact he'd been on Jeremy Corbyn's front bench, that the sense that if Keir Starmer creates rows which drive home to voters that this isn't the Labour Party as it was under Jeremy Corbyn, that, I think, is a win for Keir Starmer. I mean, normally the rule in politics is that divided parties don't win elections. But the idea that Keir Starmer is taking on the Corbynites is, I think, a kind of slam dunk for him and works. And it's very striking to me that in every interview that senior Labour figures now in the shadow cabinet do about the Russia report, it's not like you, Cindy, or the equivalent of you in these interviews are kind of pushing them into conceding that Jeremy Corbyn got his response for Salisbury poisoning is wrong. They want to actively say that because they know how much that hurt Labour with lots of its traditional supporters, this sense that they didn't stand up for the country against its enemies. And I think you can see again in how Keir Starmer's Labour Party talks about China that it is clearly trying to outflank the government on China at every turn. You know, it's Lisa Nandy who's saying, why aren't you doing more about HSBC and Standard Chartered, you know, nodding along to the Hong Kong security law than you have been? So I think from Keir Starmer's point of view, the idea that he is taking on the Corbynites, I think that is actually an electoral plus for him rather than a negative.
Katie, do you think that's effective messaging to the electorate? We saw from PMQs today Keir Starmer making it very clear that he's not the previous leadership on national security matters. This is what he had to say.
Mr Speaker, in case the Prime Minister hasn't noticed, the Labour Party is under new management. Yeah! And no front bencher of this party has appeared on Russia Today since I've been leading this party.
So Boris Johnson clearly was trying to pin him to Corbyn. Do you think that works?
I think it was a good Prime Minister's questions, actually, for both of them, which I know is a fudge of an answer. But often you'll say, who won? Well, Boris Johnson, I think, landed plenty of lines that really cheered his MPs. He seemed to be much more full of life than, I think, if you rewound to, like, PMQs about 6 weeks ago. He seemed in much better health and also was just... seemed to be enjoying it. And I think he did land some points against Keir Starmer. But Keir Starmer, I think, if you... I don't think it was that he... Despite, you know, saying Boris Johnson writes articles for everything, you know, different opinions, I don't think he really, like, landed a killer blow on Boris Johnson. Mm. But what he did do in that Prime Minister's questions appearance was put more clear blue water between himself and Jeremy Corbyn. Now, Keir Starmer chose to go on the Russia report. Like, he decided to take the avenue of questioning. And I presume in those preparations that you would do for that, they anticipated that when Keir Starmer brought up Russia Today, a very quick and likely reply coming from the Prime Minister would be, ooh, Labour, Russia Today, not a great track record there. And that allowed Keir Starmer to turn around and say, look, this is a party under new management. And I think that's, to me, seemed a very rehearsed line, but it was an effective line. And I think it's one of the strongest uses of language you've had from Keir Starmer since he became Labour leader in terms of distancing himself from Jeremy Corbyn. If we think back to the Labour leadership, and clearly there are reasons there because of the membership, but, you know, Keir Starmer's very keen to big up how much he supported what Corbynism had done. I think, remember a leadership video where there are pictures of him effectively hugging Jeremy Corbyn. So it feels like we have gone quite a long way down now. And also made the point that under his leadership, no one in the front bench, his front bench, had been on Russia Today. So I think that it was clearly picked as a topic because they thought right. it was going to be something where they could actually make the point that he was different. And I think the fact that you have a Labour leader wanting to talk about national security and say that they support national security, yes, that sounds really non-controversial, but it was clearly such a weak spot for Jeremy Corbyn. He's trying to make a point.
James, in recent weeks, the Conservatives have sort of pivoted from calling Keir Starmer forensic and lawyerly to now saying that he flip-flops on everything, which is what you hear all the time from Boris Johnson, Prime Minister's questions now. Is that coming from focus groups that people think that he's indecisive?
Well, I mean, with this number 10, it's safe to assume that almost everything is being backed up by opinion research. I think there's an interesting question about the Keir Starmer thing. Because Keir Starmer is quite unusual in British politics in that he has run a large organisation, the Department for Public Prosecutions, before becoming party leader. I think you can see here today from the point of view when he's talking about the Alexander Litvinenko killer's prosecution, how he is trying to use that to credentialise himself. You know, one thing that people have always talked about in politics is the blink test. Can you imagine this person standing outside the door of 10 Downing Street? And I think Jeremy Corbyn never passed that test. And Keir Starmer is clearly trying to establish himself as that. And I think that you... I mean, what Boris Johnson is trying to do is trying to say, but what does he really stand for? And I think it's quite... It's not a bad line of attack, because I think Boris Johnson has a kind of emotional connection with voters. And Keir Starmer isn't really trying to create that kind of emotional connection. Instead, he's trying to say, I'm competent. And I think so. I think that's why you see Boris Johnson going, well, what does he stand for? What does he right. really believe? Because essentially, Starmer's, I think, kind of key insight is that in the British system, oppositions don't win elections, governments lose them. And what you can see Boris Johnson saying is, but, you know, he's trying to turn the next election, 4 years away though it is, from being a referendum on the government into being a choice between him and Keir Starmer, and saying to people, you know, it's not just about whether you think, you know, what you think of the government, it's what do you think he believes? What do you think he would do with this power?
And Katie, today is also the final day of this parliamentary term. It's been a pretty extraordinary term, hasn't it, in coronavirus era?
Yeah, it's been a very strange session. And I think even if we go a bit long lens to, you know, from that election victory in December, which feels so long away now, up to the summer recess, which is clearly the longest break, I don't think anyone, is a cliche, would have expected things to turn out they have. But I do get the sense that, you know, it's been really, really choppy for the government and for the country, clearly, in terms of the effect of coronavirus. But it does feel as though things are now in a place where people have breathing space. I think the question is, clearly the government wants to get on with all their, you know, domestic agenda, not talking about coronavirus, looking at other things. How long is that window? Is the window now an indefinite window, or do they basically have until September, when coronavirus is suddenly going to get harder to control for various reasons, such as the fact that the weather changes? It's much harder to tell people to avoid, you know, hang out inside as much as possible when it's slightly sunny, as it is as we're recording this podcast, rather than when it's, you know, dark at night and raining.
I think that there's absolutely no doubt that for the new intake, Katie's written an excellent politics column on this in the magazine, out tomorrow and all available in all good newsagents. But there's no doubt for this 2019 intake, this has made their entry into parliamentary politics very, very weird. And I think if you look at one of the reasons why the government has, under parliamentary pressure, had to move on various issues, the fact that MPs have not been physically present has definitely contributed to that. And I think that, you know, the question away, normally governments try and do a huge amount of stuff in their honeymoon period. Coronavirus ended Boris Johnson's honeymoon period, essentially. And so I think the question is, you know, what can they get back to the agenda they wanted to be on before coronavirus? Or has coronavirus kind of changed politics permanently?
Although there is a theory going around that because it's a Vote Leave gang inside Number 10, they don't care so much about parliamentary politics and that they have done much less to please backbenchers and to communicate with them than previous governments have. Katie, do you think that's made things more difficult for them?
I think it's an interesting one. I think it is the case that this Number 10 don't pay that much attention to MPs. I think you can sometimes overstate it, because I was speaking to somebody about previous governments we had, and that, can you think of a Number 10 that loved the parliamentary party, right? But we are potentially going to get, if we keep going back, but the point made to me by, you know, Conservative politicians who have served, you know, or played a role in the past, you know, three Conservative governments, is Theresa May's Number 10 was incredibly controlling. They did a bit more party management, but then they also didn't have a majority. they had a working majority. It was so difficult from the beginning, it wasn't even really an option not to do that. And also, you know, when David Cameron was Prime Minister, the idea that they did what they had to do, but it wasn't something they enjoyed. I think that perhaps the difference is that I think that some of those in Number 10 at the moment, in the past, have at least taken a certain amount of pride in the fact that they think Parliament's a bit out of date, they don't pay, you know, full attention to it. I think that because there is a majority of 80, and that's not something we've had if you look at the previous governments I've just mentioned, there's a sense that you didn't need to do as much. And I think, I mean, I remember writing pieces saying they wouldn't have to do as much, but there are lots of circumstances which change the picture. And I think we have seen over the past few months that, you know, it doesn't take too many people for that majority to look a lot smaller. And so I've written about the new intake, and I actually think while there are problems there, they are fairly resolvable. You know, if you do a few things, they are not insurmountable. But as one cabinet minister said to me, is the bigger problem, in a way, if you think long term, is if you count up the number of ex-ministers with the number of never ministers who have now decided, because they're an older intake, they are never getting promoted in this government, you're getting close to around 40.
Right.
And that starts to make a majority of 80 look very difficult. So they have problems like that.
Well, Katie, we'll continue this discussion with Paul Goodman, editor of Conservative Home, on this week's The Edition podcast as well, when we talk about your piece. James and Katie, thanks very much, and join us again tomorrow.
The Spectator's podcast now have a newsletter. Sign up for free at spectator.co.uk/podcast-highlights to get The Spectator's podcast highlights in your inbox every Monday.